from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Coming up, as California considers whether or not to legalize recreational marijuana use, a new study from UC Davis is raising concerns about the long-term impact of smoking pot. Researchers say the users they followed over several decades ended up in a lower social class than their parents. We'll discuss the results. Then later in the hour, now that the FBI says it can unlock the San Bernardino shooter's iPhone by itself, the impact of the government's case against Apple and the debate over privacy and security. We'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome once again to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer. Michael Krasny is away this week. Well, come November, Californians might just get to vote on whether to legalize the recreational use of marijuana for adults. And there will no doubt be debate around issues involving law enforcement and public safety, the potential health impact of regular use, how it might affect teenagers, that kind of thing. Well, now comes something else to consider. A new study by UC Davis researchers appearing today in Clinical Psychological Science Online examines the negative effects of long-term pot use on social mobility and economic well-being. Here with us to talk about the study and its ramifications are Magdalena Cerdá. She's associate professor in emergency medicine at the School of Medicine at UC Davis, the lead author on this report. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Also with us, David Downs. He's a reporter covering California marijuana issues. He writes the Smell the Truth blog for SF Gate and Legalization Nation for the East Bay Express. David Downs, good morning to you as well.
Good morning, Scott.
Magdalena, let me begin with you because this is your real long-term study. You looked at folks, not you personally, but the study looked at folks for 38 years. That's a very long time. Tell us what exactly was looked at over that period of time.
Yeah, thank you. So this study looked at people from birth on until age 38, and we looked at their level of cannabis use, that is the use of marijuana, over time. And then we also looked at the economic and social problems that they experienced in midlife, that is at age 38.
And these were people where?
In Dunedin. So Dunedin is, the seventh largest city in New Zealand. It's a university town, and this sample included all births born between March 1972 and April 1973.
What was the genesis for that? As you said, it's a long time ago. And why that place? And what were the researchers originally looking for, do you think?
I think they were interested in the early life and life course progression of health outcomes and the early life origins of different types of health problems. And it started there because the researchers who started the study were originally at the University of Otago in New Zealand.
And so these were people who began using marijuana at very different ages, or do they all begin at youth? I mean, what's the usage like in this cohort?
Yeah, the earliest I think that we have data on would be age 12. And so the varying ranges of age from age 12 on. And what we particularly looked at was cannabis dependence, that is addiction to cannabis, as well as regular cannabis use, that is use four or more times a week, from ages 18 to 38. So at five assessments from ages 18 to 38, how many years did they exhibit cannabis addiction or regular use?
And these were varying levels and doses and frequencies of use of marijuana, right?
That's right. But we particularly in our study, and it's important to note, we focused on regular use, that is regular heavy use four or more times a week, and cannabis addiction, that is people who continue to use in spite of experiencing legal, social, health problems related to their cannabis use.
And so the big takeaways were what?
So we found that people who engaged in regular cannabis use over many years ended up in a lower social class than their parents. What that means is that they ended up in jobs that required fewer skills, were less prestigious, and paid less than the jobs their parents had. And why that's interesting is because the rest of the study participants who were not regular long-term users actually ended up in a higher social class than their parents.
And the thinking is that happened why?
There are many potential explanations for why regular long-term cannabis users ended up having more social and economic problems. One of them could be, we know from other data, including from data from this study, that there may be an effect of long-term cannabis use on brain structure and function. So it could be that long-term regular use is linked with cognitive deficits, a decline in IQ, and that could be later linked to economic problems. It could also be a social effect that kids become engaged in heavy use. They start associating with other peers and in a type of social environment where material achievement, professional success is not valued, and that leads to more problems later on. Or it could be that there's a third factor explaining both risk for cannabis, regular cannabis use, and later social and economic problems.
And did you separate out people who began when, you mentioned 12 years old, that's obviously very young. Did you separate people out by when they began to use it? Because I would imagine there'd be a different impact on somebody who began smoking when they were, say, a teenager versus somebody who began smoking when they were 25.
Yeah, that's a great point, actually. So related to that, so we looked at dependence from age 18 to 38. But even within that period, you'd think that people who, for example, became addicted before age 18 would experience much more problems than people who became addicted at age 32. So we accounted for that, and we looked at early onset versus later onset to cannabis addiction. And we found that it wasn't the timing of onset of addiction, but it was actually the persistence, the number of years that you were addicted that explained the later economic and social problems.
And how did it compare to, say, people who had similar addiction problems with alcohol, for example?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the surprising findings that we had was that cannabis dependence had comparable effects in terms of antisocial problems in the workplace, relationship conflict, and downward social class mobility compared to alcohol. And in fact, in terms of financial difficulties, cannabis dependence was worse. So people who were regular cannabis users over many years actually experienced more financial problems, such as troubles with debt and cash flow or food insecurity, than people who were dependent on alcohol over many years.
And is alcohol, or rather marijuana use, legal or illegal? Is it criminalized in New Zealand?
Marijuana use is illegal.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so might some of the findings be the result of, say, getting caught and getting in trouble with the law?
Yeah, that's a great point, and that's something we were definitely concerned about. And because of that issue, we actually looked at the same associations, but limiting our sample to those who were not convicted for cannabis-related crimes. And we still found the same effects within that group. So it does not seem to be an issue of the criminalization of cannabis.
And you've talked about addiction. Is regular use the same as addiction? And what's the distinction in terms of the outcomes?
We found so we were concerned that perhaps some of the results that we were seeing with addiction were actually specific to addiction and not to regular use. So we looked at both addiction and regular use, and we found the same findings for both.
Okay,
same economic and social effects.
All right, that's Magdalena Cerda. She is the lead author of this study looking at long-term cannabis use in New Zealand and the impact on social mobility and financial well-being. David Downs, let me bring you into this. I think it's fair. Is it fair to say that you're an advocate of legalizing marijuana? Or I just wanted to put that out there before I ask you to assess what your take is on the study.
I think it's fair to say that I've covered the issue independently as a journalist for 8 years, and after interviewing thousands of people, I definitely believe that we need to update and evolve our medical cannabis laws and recreational cannabis laws in the United States to better, you know, fit the picture that science is giving us.
Okay. And so your take on what you just heard there from Magdalena. Cerda.
I think it's super fascinating. The Dunedin study cohort that is in New Zealand has, again, been this group that's been monitored for 40 years. And they do a lot of different statistical analyses of this group because, again, you've been tracking these people for 40 years. And it's not the first time I've heard of cannabis-related science coming out of this study group, but it's also not the first time that there's potentially been problems with interpreting data from this cohort. Most recently, there was a study that said that people who smoke pot had a lower IQ, And then some other studies came out from that cohort saying that actually, you know, that we explained away the IQ decrease by confounding factors. This study says that they've controlled for every confounding factor there could be. And I think that's a super fascinating ability to be able to do that. And I think it's obviously going to require more research and other people repeating the study to get a closer look at what exactly is going on here.
So are you saying you're skeptical of the findings?
I don't know. I mean, on one hand, I think they're like common sense. I mean, everything in moderation. If you drink a lot, if you smoke a lot, if you do any, you know, mind-altering activity heavily every day, I imagine it's going to alter a lot of people's life courses. I don't hear anybody saying smoke pot every day, it's going to turn out great, unless it's like maybe Snoop Dogg, the rapper. But even then, Dr. Dre, another rapper, has said, don't smoke pot every day. It's not going to turn out great for you.
But in terms of this study, Magdalena, it's not everyone smoking every day, right? I mean, what's there's a variation in the frequency.
That's right. Yes, there are people who never smoked. There are people who smoked, but not every day. And there are people who smoked every day. And so the effect that we found was concentrated among those people who smoked pot four more times a week. So I think that's a very important point to highlight, and something that David was saying. The effect was among these heavy regular users, not among the light occasional users.
Yeah, I would also say that, you know, a lot of people have brought up issues with correlation versus causation with these type of things. And although you can account for criminalization, you can't account for societal stigmatization. A big component of determining that someone's addicted to pot is social and life consequences, like getting expelled from school or negative reactions from family members. And a lot of that, you know, isn't necessarily determined by your cannabis use, but the society you live in. Taken at face value, if people who are heavy smokers when they're young are on a life course that's going down, a trajectory that's going down, it's all the more reason to keep these people in school and, you know, not be criminalizing them.
This is just a half-hour segment, so I'm going to open up the phone lines in case you want to join us. The number to call here at Forum is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, of course. It's Forum. At kqed.org. We've got one email from a listener who writes, if the children in the study were tracked from birth, how was it determined that some of them would become regular pot smokers? How many other factors were considered? Right, Glenn?
This study actually interviewed the same people from birth up to age 38 multiple times. So they were interviewed at ages 3, 5, 7, 9, etc., 13, 15, 18, 21. So by interviewing them at each of these years, we were actually able to ask them questions about their pot use and about the effects of pot use, as well as about their social and economic problems.
David, this kind of an issue is likely to come up if there is a ballot measure to legalize recreational marijuana use for adults in California. What is your take on this how powerful an issue could this be in a larger discussion in a campaign?
Well, we're already seeing issues of how, you know, cannabis will affect kids, how cannabis will affect driving safety, and other factors like this come into play in the California election cycle here in 2016, as well as elsewhere across the country. And so you're going to see opponents of legalization jump on this and go, look, we got to keep prohibition going. We have to save our kids. We have to save our communities by keeping this stuff away from them. And you're going to see activists say, this study is not generalizable, and even if it's correct, that's all the more reason to tax and regulate adult use and fund more research, more public education, and more public awareness, which is what the leading campaign in California would try to do.
And has there been any experience so far in, say, Colorado or Washington? I know those have just recently legalized recreational use of marijuana. I mean, I'm sure there are lots of researchers doing studies. Are either of you aware of anything that's come out along these lines so far?
Go ahead, Professor Cerda.
We're doing research on that right now, but we haven't published findings particularly on Colorado and Washington yet.
And who's funding the research?
The National Institute on Drug Abuse is funding a lot of our research.
So it's the federal government?
Yeah.
Okay.
That would
David?
another issue that activists take with this type of research is that the National Institute on Drug Abuse has like a mission that involves not finding any benefits in cannabis. They only fund studies that look for harms in cannabis because they're an institute on drug abuse, not drug use or drug grooviness. And they're the number one funder.
I don't think there's an institute on drug grooviness.
I know. That would be a California one. They would have to start. But they're the number one funder of cannabis research in the world. And so, you know, activists say that the research is incredibly slanted to sort of build a slam book on cannabis.
Yeah. Magdalena, yeah.
I would actually counter that. I mean, I can talk about our own research. We conducted a study looking at the impact that medical marijuana legalization had on adolescent use, funded by NIDA, and we found that it was actually associated with no change in teen use or even decline in use among eighth graders. And we published that. That was funded by NIDA. So we did not face opposition in terms of publishing the science as the data shows it.
All right, let's get to the phones and let's start off in New York. Eddie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is to the young lady who did this study. I did my own study when I was in college between alcohol and marijuana, and after never using marijuana before, I actually switched from drinking to smoking pot. And my question is, when you did this study, is there any control, or do you know where the people drug tested for other drugs? Did they use alcohol in combination with marijuana? Because when I was 18 and I did this in college, a friend of mine, I used to drink avidly and not use marijuana at all. And he dared me to try to switch. And when I switched, I never went back because, A, I found the benefits of marijuana. I never had a hangover. My body still functions. I'm now 40 years old. I've smoked from the point of 19 to 40 every day. I function. I have a very high-paying job. I'm the unlaziest guy you've ever met, and I function totally fine. I feel like the stigmatism towards marijuana is from older generations where they use the excuse of it as a gateway drug. Alcohol does much more damage than marijuana, and it's been proven a million times over.
Okay, let's give her a chance to respond. Magdalena, start off.
So we did look at alcohol use as well as hard drug use, and we were concerned that perhaps all the social and economic effects were actually due to alcohol. So we looked at the effect of cannabis use on economic and social outcomes, taking out those people who were also dependent on hard drugs or were also dependent on alcohol, and we found the same effects of cannabis. I can't speak to particular examples of effects of cannabis. I can only speak to what the data shows us in the sample of almost 1,000 people. And I would like to also highlight that we're just talking about the effect of cannabis on economic and social problems. We're not talking about physical health, mental health, where perhaps alcohol may have a more harmful effect than cannabis.
All right, Eddie, thanks very much for the call. Let's go now to San Rafael. Scott, welcome.
Thank you. Just a quick question, comment. I am an attorney, medical cannabis attorney. I've been in the field for about 20 years. I have some issues with the report, I guess. The first is you're throwing around loaded words like addiction, where addiction is defined as you have, you know, withdrawal symptoms when you stop, such as an alcoholic who stops drinking. They have physical withdrawal symptoms. It does not exist with marijuana. I think it's careless for you to throw around loaded words like that when it's inappropriate in a study like this.
Magdalena, sir. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, just the second issue. It's just the causation relationship that you talked about. You're taking a pool of people who are willing to break the law and then saying that these people have a lower standard of living than their parents. Regardless of anything else in any other study, that itself seems to suggest that there's a causal relationship there, regardless of marijuana. So I don't understand how you can say that you've taken out all the other, you know, potential causes for this and concluded that it's marijuana that's causing this result.
Magdalena?
So the question about addiction is a good question. So as according to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association that defines psychiatric disorders, cannabis dependence is defined as people who continue to use cannabis in spite of experiencing social, health, or legal problems related to their cannabis. So it's withdrawal and it's also dependence. And We know that approximately 6 to 10% of the population in the United States exhibits problems of cannabis dependence. In terms of the issue of causation, we had that concern as well, that it could be that these are just people who are more prone to breaking laws, and in a place where cannabis is illegal, you're seeing these problems. And because of that, because we had information on these people from birth, we were able to account for antisocial behaviors, impulsivity, lower motivation, IQ, socioeconomic problems in childhood. A lot of factors that may make people more likely to be for what quote unquote lawbreakers, and that may also lead to later social and economic problems. And even after accounting for all of those factors, we still found an effect. Now, of course, this is not a randomized trial, so we can't say conclusively that it's a causal effect, but I think we have fairly robust evidence that we have a strong signal here.
All right, Scott, thanks for the call. We're getting some what we might call pushback from our followers on Facebook. Brian says, BS. Michael writes, sounds like a lot of assumptions are involved in this study, like saying that cannabis is addictive when there are no addictive properties. I think you responded to some of that. And then a listener writes, so this is a study of people living in New Zealand and not the U.S. That explains why my situation goes against this guest study. I make over six figures, have a wife and two children. I had trouble with cash flow when I was a young adult, like most young adults, but I'm now 42. Those troubles have gone away. Maybe the speaker should do a study in the U.S. if they want to assume that people who smoke pot regularly have a lower social class and lower skill jobs. Thoughts about that? Would you likely find differences if you did a similar study in the U.S. because it's in a different place?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are two responses to that. First of all, the reality is we can't do that study in the U.S. because we'd have no data on the same people from birth to age 40 over multiple time points with any study in the U.S. So that's why we're doing something like that in New Zealand, because it gives us a unique window into the evolution of cannabis use and social and economic problems over the life course. But beyond that, I think another finding that allays the concern about lack of generalizability is that there have been other studies looking at these questions in the US, in Europe, in Australia, and they've all found the same consistent findings, that regular cannabis use over many years is associated with more social and economic problems.
We've got just about a minute and a half left before we have to wrap up this segment. David, your thoughts looking ahead? There are going to be studies like this, mm-hmm. although this is, I think, somewhat unique because it's so longitudinal, but what are you looking at as studies like this come out? What are the questions that get raised in your mind?
We're going to see more questions. The questions that are raised in my mind when these studies come out.
Who funds it, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I think anybody, who's interested in the scientific method wants to look at repeatability, generalizability, funding sources, correlation versus causation, and then the quantifiable, data we have on how dependent we are on dose here and the relative risk versus alcohol. I mean, when you're talking about a decreased life trajectory, are we talking about you end up homeless on the street or you end up, making like one income bracket below? So there's a.
Okay, sorry, didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah.
We are at the bottom of the hour. Thanks so much to both of you for coming in. David Downs, who writes the Smell the Truth blog for SF Gate, and Magdalena Serda, who is the lead author of this study from UC Davis. Thank you both very much for coming in.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to have a conversation, the latest on Apple versus the FBI. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Stay with us.